Shut up and sit down.
Cyclists are incredible athletes as far as endurance goes, but a great deal of them fight like little.
Viva, viva le Tour de France. Y'a le maillot jaune, le maillot vert.
Speedos. Not only do Speedos offer very little protection for your manly or womanly bits, but they also look wrong. Yes, it'll prevent you from getting farmer's tan lines, but no, that's not a valid excuse. If you want to do group rides without everybody trying to drop you, steer well clear of Speedos. You are far less likely to end up being arrested for indecency or severely reducing your ability to start a family.
You are listening to Les Podcasts Day Dialed with Matt Legrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. Five-time Tour de France champion, Bernard Hinault, once said something that you should really chew on. You can't win without suffering. Whether it's in the mountains or in a time trial, you have to spare no effort. You may feel drained at the finish, but the joy of winning helps you forget everything. Viva Les Tour!
Oh, you know I'm wearing my Speedos. When I'm doing cardio, I'm wearing Speedos. It feels super breezy like I ride tornadoes.
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Pondering, and I'm here with Lance Friggin Hepler.
Lance Friggin Hepler. Hello. Welcome to Almost July.
At your friggin' service.
At your friggin' service.
Hey, Lance, guess what?
What up?
We got somebody on the phone right now.
On the phone.
Who do you think that might be?
Who is it?
I don't know. Whoa! Who's this guy?
There we go.
The one and only Mr. Evan Price.
Evan Price.
The only time I come here is to be wrong. So I prepare for incredible overconfidence, undereducated opinions, and probably forgetting who I picked here in 3 weeks.
Likely, yes. Awesome. Matt is. What is he currently doing? Like
he is coaching cross country. Yeah.
The freshly minted head coach of the Camas cross country team.
He is. He will be joining us shortly, we think.
We think. Well, he'll be here. At some point in time, he'll be here. So he will jump in this week. Guys, guess what?
What is it?
Saturday is the start of the Tour de France.
It is now Thursday, and in 2 days,
in less than 40 hours,
the Tour de France will start.
Kicks off 3 weeks of gloriousness. It's going to be awesome. So that means we're going to do our Tour de France picks, and we're going to kick off the tour season, and we'll be talking about it quite a bit over the next, 3 weeks?
Yes.
So and even keep your eyes peeled for a potential couple live podcasts, and you guys can jump in and play along. So per usual, we're going to run through, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things, Tour de France. We're going to make some picks. We're going to some of us are going to be right. Some of us are going to be very wrong.
Evan.
We'll see. And kind of go from there.
Let's be honest. All of us will be wrong. Some of us will be less wrong than the others.
That is true.
So to kick things off, what are a couple things that you guys are excited about for the tour other than the fact that it's back?
This first stage looks awesome.
It does.
Has everybody seen the profile for this first? I mean, this is.
So this year they're they're starting in Spain in the Basque Country. They're starting and ending in the town of Bilbao. I've actually been to Bilbao before.
Different from Bilbo Baggins?
Bilbo Baggins, not the same.
Okay.
But it's beautiful country. There's a very cool, odd looking Guggenheim Museum there. And actually on day two, they end up in San Sebastian, which is a gorgeous coastal town in northern Spain as well. But yes, go ahead, Evan, with stage one.
No, you're right. Yeah, so they're going Bilbao to Bilbao. The report that I'm hearing is that it's going to be very classics-esque type riding. So, we're talking a very spiky type stage. It's going to be one for the stage hunters. You know, we say this now as, teams will be going after the jersey, but who knows? Pogacar or Vingegaard could want to get involved in this, but it is just climb after climb after climb. I mean, it's five categorized climbs on day one over 180 kilometers. So
usually day one is not that hard. And this year it is very hard for day one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's either a prologue or a procession to a sprint is usually what day one is. So this is exciting, and day two is a similar type stage actually. So there could be some gaps already forming just in the first 2 days of this year's tour.
So what are we expecting out of the gates, boys? Is it going to be a big old slugfest, or do you think teams are going to kind of sit back and see who's going to want to do something here, and everybody's just going to mark each other and they'll finish relatively close and like separate the field early? Or do you think we're going to have somebody that's going to like come out swinging and really want that big time gap and go for it?
No, I don't think the favorites will go for it. You don't on think stage one.
None of them are going to send it, huh?
But I don't think anybody wants to have the yellow jersey from start to finish. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too hard on the team.
But
the only guy I could see attempting it is Pogacar just because of his style of riding. But no, I agree. I don't think Jumbo-Visma wants the jersey that early. This is going to be exciting because you're going to see guys like, you know, Matthew Vanderpool, Nielsen Paulus from America. You're going to see probably a team like Intermarché try to throw in a bunch of guys into the break. So the first like 100K of this stage is going to be exciting because the break forming is going to be intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to say Pogacar's going to come out and he's going to drop a bomb on people, and he's going to go because he wants to make a statement. And I think he's okay with being in the yellow, but I think he just wants to put it out there like, hey, I'm fine, guys. And mine to lose. I honestly think that he's going to come out and go super hard. Because he's got the ability to make a stick.
Jumbo,
you think Jumbo?
I think Jumbo wants him to do that. No, I think Jumbo's going to let him do it. Because if you think of last year's tour, Pogacar really spent a lot of matches trying to one-up Vingegaard in quite a few of the early stages. So I think if Jumbo-Visma can keep the gap moderately close to him, but let him mess around and kind of do his thing, then I think they're going to be sitting pretty going into that third week.
Okay, but let's think about this. Last year, Pogacar's kind of undoing was being tag teamed.
Stage 11 is still one of the best classics of all time last year.
By Primoz and Vingegaard.
That rope-a-dope was fantastic.
It was freaking awesome. Yeah.
Well, so he also wasn't eating and drinking for like a day or two when he should have been. So yeah, you're right. He got rope-a-doped, and also Jumbo-Visma isolated him to where he couldn't be getting bottles and nutrition like he should have.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's well played.
Yeah, it's very well played. So I think Jumbo-Visma would be excited to see him already burning matches in the first 2 days.
Okay.
And they're just like, cool, we'll just keep him in sight.
How are we liking UAE's team this year to help support him? I mean, last year they were quasi-decimated with, was it positive COVID tests and injuries and things of that nature? He lost a lot of his support, so he had to do a lot of the work on his own. And there was a couple of times when he had the likes of Brandon McNulty, if I'm not mistaken. Was it McNulty that was being superhuman to him? I mean, he got some help, but I think that they're going to go in with a better game plan this time, and they're going to know that there's teams that are going to beat him up and expose him, because he was for sure exposed. So smarter game plan. We'll say he's healthy right now. I think that he's been probably doing the work that he needed to do to bounce back after his wrist injury, and he's got, I think, a pretty solid team around him. I don't know. I just think that he's going to be in a good spot.
He has Rafa Majka and Mark Soler and Adam Yates.
Yeah.
So he's got
Adam Yates. Yeah.
He's got some solid people around him. So
he does. And I mean, he's got, you know, Matteo Trentin too, who on these first week is going to be tasked with a lot of the keeping him as protected as possible. The team looks strong. The problem is just with how strong Jumbo-Visma is, I mean, if you line up these guys, who do you take, Sepkus or Mark Soler? I take Sepkus.
Yep.
Who do you take, Rafa Majka or, God, I mean, Jumbo-Visma's got a few Rafa Majka. But, I mean, even a Wout on any stage can go toe-to-toe with the likes of some of these guys. And it's just going to come down to who can stay upright for UAE. So, right. I mean, if all these guys stay upright, I mean, Adam Yates might be next to Sepkus the best lieutenant in the tour right now.
He's a GC contender in his own right. I mean,
he is.
I mean, he's definitely a super domestique. So it's going to be interesting to see hey, I mean, can he be there with him? And if he can, and it's just Sepkus, Vingegaard, Pogacar, Adam Yates every stage at the end, that's going to be exciting to watch.
Why wouldn't Tade go after it on day one and start to create that precedent, and knowing that he can do it again on day two, and then they'll like smooth things out with some of those flatter stages?
I think purely because it puts too much pressure on the rest of the team for three solid weeks.
Uh-huh.
You have to control the peloton for 3 weeks. Yeah. You're the one in charge of seeing what happens.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Sorry, we have been interrupted.
Breaking news. The one and only.
I just finished the race and I was like, that sucked. Crashed a couple times. My bike handling isn't that great. Yes, I'm not good at this. And I thought I was going to be good.
Matt, we're not talking about cyclocross. We're talking about the Tour de France. How are you, Matt LeGrand?
If we're not talking about cyclocross, I'm out of here.
Welcome to the podcast, sir.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look...
Hello, Matt.
You look hot and you need something to cool you off.
Oh, look at this.
Matt brought... Otter Pops. Frozen Pops.
They look like the healthy version, though.
They're the healthy version, so you guys should just avoid them at all costs. But Lance is diving right in, which
I'm diving right in.
I appreciate.
Super fruit, some kind of pomegranate thing is delicious.
Yep. We have begun our discussion on the Tour de France, Matt.
Good.
And I'll take one of those.
Which one?
Sure, pomegranate. Okay. And we're basically just kicking things off about what's going to happen on the first couple days, knowing that it's going to be an atypical start for the Tour. It's going to be a little bit more hilly, and we've been talking about who we think might come out swinging. Or are the big teams going to send it and try and create a statement early on? Or is it going to be more of like a sit back and wait kind of a situation? So I think I'm the one that said that Tade's going to try and go for it because he wants to do it. These guys are saying that nobody wants to hold the yellow jersey for three weeks.
Yeah, I say no. He won't go for it. He'll sit with Vingegaard.
He's going to audit it. Yep.
He's going to audit it with Vingegaard. Okay. He'll also audit it.
I think Tade is going to... be biking defensively the first week because I think he's going to give himself the extra rest to come back from the wrist break situation. He's probably not at perfect fitness. He probably will be very strong the third week. So if I were every other team, you got to take advantage of that first week.
Drill it.
If you're Jonas, you go the first week, you give yourself a couple, if you can get yourself whatever it is, maybe a whole minute more, who knows? Like this is the week that he's going to drill it. And we know he's on form. We know he's fit right now. He might as well take advantage.
Tade is going to be... He's good. I don't think he is...
Oh, no, he's horrible.
I think he's going to be hamstrung at all from his injury.
No.
He's had enough time.
He's been
training.
If Jonas goes, he's going too.
Yeah,
He's too much of a competitor. So if Jonas is going to try and create a precedent on the first stage, guess who's going to be riding on his wheel?
Tade. And guess what? It's going to be fireworks on the first week. It's going to be glorious to watch.
Yes, it will.
I'm so excited.
I think the fireworks are all going to be from guys like Matthew Vanderpoel, from teams like EF, from those groups. I think is actually where the fireworks are going to come, which I think is going to make super exciting. But I actually think from a GC point of view, the first week is actually going to be boring because all I think is Vingegaard and Pogacar are going to be playing chess. They're going to be looking at each other. Neither team wants to burn their matches. When you're looking at the rest of this tour, though, there is some seriously high altitude climbing coming up. And I think that's the GC fireworks, the Vingegaard Pogacar, and I'm going to throw my other picks in there too, will be, I mean, we're talking stages 13 to the end are just going to be absolute just bloodbaths between these teams.
And that would be more traditionally what we've seen at the Tour over the years. The top guys are just playing chess the first week, staying away from crashes.
Yep.
And people like MVP, they're going to blast the first week, try to get the jersey, try to do some fun stuff, try to show off a little bit, and then maybe they finish the tour, maybe they don't.
Because Pogacar also has raced MVP enough to know in his head, he's like, okay, to take the jersey today, I have to beat MVP who's motivated for this jersey right now. That's not worth burning that match. Because you're not just going to ride away from MVP when he wants the jersey.
Here's the thing. I think that there's enough climbing on day five and day six that, yes, people like Tade and Jonas can actually ride away from people like MVP, and they can actually put some serious dents into that GC time standings. And I think we're going to see it. I think it's going to be unlike a traditional tour where the real fireworks don't start until the last week of the tour. So this is my theory. That's my take, that we actually see some interesting stuff the first week. you know, day five, day six, not necessarily like the first day. I think some of those first days, which are kind of rolly, yeah, MVP for sure could crush that. Might even see some interesting other riders try and make some, you know, interesting plays. Maybe some kind of all-arounder type people.
Yeah, yeah.
Niels Paulus, yep. he would be cool to watch. Maybe Paulus, have a day. I'd love to see him do
it. I would love to. I hate putting a pressure on a young American, but I would love to see Paulus do it. Yep, I mean, we're all talking about him, which means unfortunately he probably is going to crash out in day one.
Or but, Quinn Simmons, he could do something too, possibly.
Recent American champ, yeah. The only problem for Quinn Simmons I see though is in his one-on-one matchups in his career with a guy like Wouter, with a guy like MVP, he's just a class below. So I don't think that if MVP is anywhere near him, I do not see Quinn Simmons out doing him and anything, climbing flat, anything.
Yeah.
I have a question.
I also just don't like Quinn Simmons.
I have a question for you, yeah. Evan.
Go.
What the hell is Ineos doing? Who are they riding?
Dude, this is what I'm looking at.
Have you guys already talked about this?
No.
I have six articles up right now. One of them is literally an article talking about how bad Ineos is going to – like,
yeah.
Tom Pidcock might as well be their GC rider.
That's what I think, too.
Danny Martinez, are you kidding?
Okay, but Danny's had a good season already. So
there's some hope
for Danny Martinez.
He was 23rd in the criterium. Bernal will finish. Also, let's all be very clear. Who is riding in this tour, though? I just want this to be, even though it wasn't my prediction of last year, who is riding in this tour?
I don't know. I think we just penciled Danny Martinez in for the yellow jersey on the Champs.
Because Evan just cursed him.
I'm calling it right now. Egan Bernal is the best finisher from Ineos. Now, where is he finished?
Maybe
ninth or tenth. Hey, he's actually coming into this. Let's remember, he was 12th at the criterium. So I mean, he had a good, like, he's coming back into himself here, and also spent an absurd amount of time at altitude. He spent a ton of time at altitude this last block.
I think he has very low chances of being on the podium.
Bernal?
Bernal. Yes, Egan Bernal.
I would not be surprised if he's
having knee issues, isn't he?
I don't know.
I would not be surprised if he is Ineos's top finisher.
He will not be on the podium.
Okay, so was this a major surprise that they didn't take Geraint Thomas? Because
I think it's because he just had a huge Giro.
Yeah, right?
He did the Giro, or he's gonna do the Vuelta. Which one did we already have?
No, he did the Giro. He's planning on doing the Vuelta too.
He's got the Vuelta coming. He just barely lost the Giro, barely on the last day.
He's the favorite for the Vuelta for me. I think he's going to be the favorite going into that. Yeah.
It'd be his last hurrah. Is he retiring? Is that that's official?
No,
right?
It is not official. No.
Go out on a win, G.
G has said that, he's won. What is he? He's won one of them already. He's won the Giro.
One tour.
He's won the Giro and he's won the
tour.
Tour.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Vuelta.
So possibly to go and win the Vuelta, that would just be
trifecta.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. So
that'd be great.
Do it. Yeah.
What do you guys know about the young Spanish rider from Ineos? Is it Carlos Rodriguez?
Yes.
They're calling him a bit of a, like, he could be somebody that steps up for GC for Ineos, and they obviously know something about this kid.
They better hope he does, because the rest of their roster is not looking like it's GC driven. So
that's the thing. If you're Ineos, what are you doing? Are you just throwing? Is this a shotgun approach? Like we're just gonna put some guys out there and see what happens. Maybe we'll have some guys closer to the top.
I mean,
we're just getting stages. If you're Ineos,
Pidcock can do some stuff.
I think that's who I would play with if I was Ineos.
I think
he's the most talented.
Pidcock and this Rodriguez kid. I think those are going to be two people that are going to surprise us in this tour.
Pidcock won the Alpe d'Huez stage last year on the freaking descent.
Yeah.
He made up like a minute and a half.
He put a minute in the descent.
The descent. That was freaking amazing.
Yeah.
So
but how many last selections was Pidcock in with Geraint Thomas?
Yeah, but he still held everybody else off up the whole Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah, so, but he's
well,
he's
he
in
held
a
off a couple of people,
day.
Right? I mean, it was
he's
a
going
ton of people.
for This is GC is a different story. He was never Garand's last lieutenant at any point in any of those climbs.
No, it's true.
So there's no way. And also this year's tour, when you look at a couple of these stages, there's one I'm going to highlight for us here.
Okay.
So they're going up the Colombière, which is a massive climb. That's right. The start of week three, the big stage that this is what we need to look at. And this is what I'm going to look at and probably be completely wrong with everybody. When they go to Courchevel, guess the altitude that they finish at.
Oh, geez.
6,000
meters. Yep.
Over 2,000 meters. Over 2,000
feet.
Which means that
they're,
yeah. Yeah. Well, almost 7,000 feet, actually. So almost 7,000 feet is what they're going to finish this stage at. This climb is 28 kilometers long, 6% average. So they basically are climbing into the clouds here. And when you're looking at this tour, I mean, that stage was at 17, I think. This is late in the game. This is the stage that is going to decide everything. It's going to be, okay, who's been at altitude? Who's climbing well? Who has shown that they're a good, strong GC guy over multiple weeks? This is like tailor-made for a guy like Garand Thomas. Like if Garand Thomas was in this tour, I would say, oh, this guy, he's back on the podium. But I think you have to look at like who are the mountain animals, who like, and it's Vingegaard, Pogacar are in their own league. But when you're trying to decide that third slot, it's who is altitude ready and who can climb is going to be who is on the podium at the end of this. And I just don't think that Pidcock is strong enough for 3 weeks. And I for sure don't think he's this level of mountain animal. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that's a fair whatever we want to call it. Preview? I don't know.
Assessment.
Thank you. A fair preview. I think Pidcock he's not been tested for like full 3 weeks like this, like he would be if he were like a GC lead for Ineos. But he's clearly a talent. He can climb. He can descend.
Oh, he's amazing. He's absolutely young. Amazing. Yeah.
He's young. They've been developing him for years, and he's ready to, I think, step into that limelight. I don't know. That's just my two cents.
I think it'd be cool to see him actually like... Plus,
he might be forced in the limelight, honestly, if Ineos doesn't have anybody else that's going to be, I mean, Danny Martinez, in my opinion, has had a rocky buildup into this. I mean, I'd love to see Bernal be there. I still think he'll be Ineos's best finisher, but I don't think, I think Ineos slips Bernal barely into the top 10. And I think that's their best GC finisher.
Gotcha. So do we want to, Evan, I know that you don't have a ton of time. Let's get into some picks. Do you guys want to make your top three picks?
Sure.
Go for it.
I've got like 15 minutes, so I can also trash talk here for a second. All right, but let's
get this out of the way. Let's do our picks, and then we can trash talk the rest of the time.
Do we want to start with number three and work our way?
Three.
Okay. We're just going to go around the table and say our threes?
Let's go around the table and say our threes.
Say all three.
Yeah, you say
all three. Okay. So my third pick. Actually, I'm just going to start from the top. My top pick, because top two are just such a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Except for which order. Jonas Vingegaard will win the Tour de France for a second time. You've heard it here first.
Or you've heard it everywhere else.
I think he's going to come in on fire. I think he's going to put time in, and then everyone's going to be racing for second. And he also, guess what? In the third week when challenging, like when things get very high and tip-toppy with that thin air, guess what? He's still going to be there, and he's going to be crushing because he's going to want to win a stage or something, and he's going to want to have fun, and he's going to do it, and he's going to just clearly win this tour. Number two.
Nice.
Obvious second pick is Pogacar. I think, again, the big preface with any of this is like, you got to stay upright. People have to stay healthy. Crashes are definitely going to happen, and they're probably going to knock out someone from my podium. But other than that, Tadej Pogacar is clearly the most talented rider probably in the peloton, and he has a better team than he's ever had, in my opinion. I think he's got a fantastic team this year. So he is my pick for second. I think having a team is better, like compared to what he had last year. He basically got isolated quite a few times last year. And I think Jumbo-Visma just picked him apart on a couple of stages, which really just broke him. In third, which is really like the pick that everyone's going to be maybe even interested in because the other top two are just such a no-brainer. In third, I got Ben O'Connor.
Ooh,
that's not a bad pick.
It's not like a dark horse pick because he's finished fourth of the tour.
It's a good pick.
This has been a long time, and he did well at Dauphiné. He was on the podium at the Dauphiné.
Yeah,
I like him. Yep. Australian guy.
Had bad luck last year.
Just didn't do well last year.
He did not do well last year.
Too many crashes, yep.
I'm very hesitant about that pick, But that's what I got for third.
I like it, though.
Yeah. That's my podium.
Gotcha. Evan, what you got, bud?
Oh, here we go, guys. So
here we go.
Me and Matt agree. Vingigo wins.
What? Does great. I thought I was going to be the only one.
I know. I know, right? He does great in the high mountains. There's only going to be, and really his time trialing is not a weakness, but really when you look at differences between him and maybe Pogacar, I mean, you're looking at the time trial. Almost non-existent time trialing this year. You only have one,
right.
Like, 20-some K time trial.
One time trial. And no, it's half flat, half climbing. So there will be bike exchanges is my guess.
Oh, you're right. I'm looking, at the profile. Yeah. I'm looking at the profile. You're right. But the climb's not long. It's not a long climb. Yeah, so the time differences, and I still don't think that, I think that actually favors Vingegaard, honestly. So I kind of agree with you, Matt. I don't think it's going to be close. I think he's going to win by a pretty solid margin. But here is where, so I think Pogacar makes, the last year he makes these mistakes. I think he's going to learn a hard lesson this year. He's going to go very hard early on. He's going to get his ego. He wants to prove a point. He's going to burn a lot of matches. I think he's going to struggle in the high mountains because he is not at his normal race schedule leading into this and his normal fitness build. And I changed my opinion on this in the last 24 hours. I was going to say Pogacar was going to win a week ago. I think that he is in trouble by the time they hit the high mountains, the Colombier, the big climb up to over 2,000 meters too on stage 17. So I think he's going to actually crack hard on one of those days.
Yeah.
So I think Pogacar is going to be fourth or fifth. In second, I have Simon Yates from Jayco. And in third, no trash talking yet. And number three, I really had to think on number two and three because I wanted to flip-flop these, but I think Simon Yates is the harder guy. I think he does better in the mountains. I think he's a better pure climber than my number three, which is David Gaudu. David Gaudu is going to slip onto the podium this year. His fourth last year.
I would love to see that.
He's maturing. He's an insanely strong climber at his best. So when you're looking at this tour, it has to be who is good in the high mountains and who can climb, and those three are the best. Right there, those three.
Interesting.
somebody write that down so I remember what I said.
I wrote it down.
It's all recorded.
Jake's got it. Perfect, because that's exactly what's happening. Read and weep.
If your picks are correct, I'm gonna be just loving life. I'm gonna buy you a drink.
I just want dinner for weeks from you guys. I expect my yard cleaned. You guys can come and walk the dog every day. If I get these right, I deserve a year worth of favors.
Oh, no. All right, so
What you got?
Okay, I am going to go with the obvious choice, which I can't believe you two idiots didn't.
Well,
but
we're idiots.
But you are idiots.
But we're idiots. Clear.
I am saying that the winner will be Tadej Pogacar. I do think that I disagree with everything Evan just said about how hard he's going to work through the tour. I think he's coming in very fit and very motivated. After losing last year, I think it became a very big focus for him. He was freaking crushed it in the early season. Yes, he broke his wrist, but then that just gave him this like
little breather
to like not have to race real hard.
100% could focus on the tour.
He was so fit
in the spring, like crazy, stupid fit.
So yeah. I do think that Jonas's team is stronger than Pogacar's. But I think Pogacar will be so motivated this year that
teams don't matter.
Yeah, he'll take it over. That he'll win.
I think both of these teams are. I think Jumbo-Visma's team's similar to where they were last year.
Yeah,
and I think the UAE team is stronger than they were last year.
So Jumbo super strong, and of course I do think that Vingegaard will take second, but it will only. I think it'll be less than 2 minutes.
Yeah,
I think it'll be less than 2 minute win for Pogacar.
If it goes that way, it could be really
tight. If it goes
that way,
yeah. So that's my guess.
Do you think someone like Wilco Kilderman is going to like come and play a big role for Pogacar?
Not necessarily, but his team is definitely better than it was.
They're better.
They're better than it was last year.
Is Brendan McNulty like racing or not? I thought he maybe not on the list.
McNulty is not on the list.
He was great.
Not sure what happened there. I didn't follow the story on that, on why he got left off their tour team. Maybe
they already have so many.
Well, it might be that they actually might be trying to utilize him for the Vuelta.
That could be it. Yeah.
Could he be leading them at the Vuelta?
We would be so excited to see that.
That'd be awesome.
As an American fan, I would love to see that. I don't care if he misses the tour. I'd be like, screw it. That's awesome. Yeah, I would love to see him go for a GC, but who knows?
Who's their other guy? It's like some Spanish guy. I can't remember what his name is.
For UAE?
Yeah. Micah?
Rafael Micah.
He's super legit. Yep. He's another guy that could be like a tour favorite. I mean, he's probably as good as Ineos has.
And Adam Yates.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait. They have Adam Yates and Mark Soler.
Is he racing?
Yeah.
That's just a sick team right there.
Yeah, the UAE team is solid. I just think Jumbo's team is.
Jumbo's team is good.
I'm going to predict an awkward stage where in one of the big, big mountain stages, Pogacar is going to be having the worst day of his so far young Tour de France career.
Nope.
And Adam Yates is going to have to make the decision to stay with him or leave him. Adam Yates is going to choose to leave him.
Interesting.
And Simon Yates and him are going to be in the last selection. Adam Yates is going to have to make a moral decision. Do I just go to the front and pull for my brother? He's going to do it. It's going to be a great moment for the Yates.
That would be a dangerous move.
All of Britain will cry. It's going to be great. Simon Yates will stay with the last move and end up like barely off of Vingegaard, and it's going to be great.
That would be amazing to watch.
That'd be cool.
Who's your number three pick?
My number three pick, I am going with Jai Hindley from Bora.
What?
So, yep.
How do I get crap for my picks?
Because you're an idiot and I'm a genius. So,
Jai Hindley, are you kidding me?
So Jai Hindley won the Vuelta last year. What did he? He won either the Vuelta or he won the Giro last year.
Okay.
So he has not done the tour yet, but he is a very strong climber. He's got some guys around him. I do think he's been one that I think can stick with the front guys. And so my pick for third is Jai Hindley.
This race is so weird in that, like, I could see anyone.
That was, like, the softest Giro ever, though. That was such a soft Giro.
Grand Tour is a Grand Tour.
This tour is so interesting in that, like, you have these two guys that are just battling for first. That's it.
Yeah.
And then you got anyone who stays healthy could maybe get third.
Like 10 guys could be on that podium.
But it could also, it's a lot of people. But then there's, like, the fact that, you know, if one of those top two guys are killing each other to get first, if they, you know, scramble off the edge of a mountain, not that they are going to tumble to their tomb. But, like, I mean, we've seen crashes when people push that hard, especially on descents. You just want then you've got two spots on the podium that open up to whoever is healthy. If I was going for that third spot, if I was like, I don't know, Miguel Landa or someone, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
I would just be like, just stay healthy, just stay upright. Don't do anything until the third week.
Yep.
Don't do anything because this is going to get weird on the third week. I don't know.
You guys ready for the results?
Yeah, I would.
The results.
Okay.
You want to hear the results before it started?
Let's hear the results.
Tade is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
I agree.
He's going to take this thing from bell to bell.
Tade tornado.
Bell to bell.
It's going
to
be tornado style.
Bell to bell. I have a sneaking suspicion he's going to come out fighting on day one because he really wants to put his stamp on this thing. He knows what he did wrong last year. And in saying that, that kind of contradicts my thought process here of like riding a little bit smarter, but he is such a fierce competitor. And I think that he's got such fire and drive in him to prove to everybody that he is not only back and he's healthy with his wrist, but I am the best bike racer in the world. That's what's going to happen. And he's going to come out and fierce.
And he is the best bike rider in the world. I mean, if you look at how he did in the classics, damn.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so impressive.
Yeah.
The problem is, we're not racing in the spring.
Exactly. And the best bike rider does not always win the tour.
That's true.
I mean, I think his biggest weakness is he is the strongest bike rider in the world right now. I think that these other teams know and they are smart and he's still just young enough and just has enough hubris to lose. I think that's his issue.
Is he young enough to get the white jersey again?
I believe so, yeah.
I think so. Yes. I think he's 24. Is he 24?
It's under 25. He is 24 years old, yes.
So he's got to be a favorite for that, for sure.
Yep.
And then you look at, like, whoever wins the whole thing is going to win the mountain.
Yes.
He hasn't raced in, what, a month and a half?
Yep.
he's hungry to go out there and put his stamp on something. And he recovers like nobody's business for the most part. And I think he's got a stronger team around him this year than he does last year.
He does.
I think that it's his race to lose.
You think he's put some time in the first week?
I do. I really do. And even if he does put time in and loses the yellow jersey, he'll be fine with that because he's still going to be, you know, forced to be reckoned with when it comes to the second half of this whole tour. So, but I do think he's going to go bell to bell. And I'm hoping it's not a boring tour. I'm hoping it's not a situation where all of a sudden he's up by 5 minutes and like, all right, well, who's going to come in second place kind of thing now. Yeah, so yeah. I think that Lance and I were talking about this a little bit more. Jonas, I still think, is going to come in second place. I think he's going to have a little bit tougher of a go of it because I think we're going to lose Wout in the first week. Wout's going to be leaving the tour because in the first week because his wife is due to have a baby.
He planted that seed.
He did plant the seed that he might not make it through the whole tour.
You've got that right there. That's going to be a huge loss for him because that is the super domestic of all super domestics of all time ever. That's your boy right there. Granted, he's got plenty of other firepower and a talent around him, but I don't think that Jonas is going to have... he's going to be strong as hell, but I just don't think that he has the same swagger as Pogacar, and losing Wout is going to take a little bit away from that team. And I think that they're just going to have some issues. They're going to have a little bit of bad luck, and Jonas is going to still have a great tour. He's going to come in second place, but that's
If Wout is listening to this podcast, come on, Wout, you got multiple kids. You don't have to be there for all
this
of them.
Second kid.
It's a second kid.
You throw him in a backpack and you go. But Lance and I were saying like they need to have like a second Yumbo bus that's just strictly like hospital baby. Kind of thing. It's baby.
It's just his wife and the doctor with his wife in the second bus. That's what they need. Just follow him around. Jumbo.
Yeah.
I do think that Jonas last year, one of the big reasons he's won was because of Primoz Roglic, because he was there for the first half.
Yeah.
Well, and they had that tag team decoy day, which was amazing.
That was the best stage to watch.
No, best racing. Right. And no Primoz this year. He's not there.
And honestly, if Wilco, I'm thinking of the wrong team. Like, if someone else from their team, like, hammers and goes, like Seb Kuss, like, you just let him go. Like, you don't care about that.
Yeah.
Yes. Whereas if it's Roglic, you're like, I kind of have to cover this move.
Yeah, because at that point in time, they didn't know who GC was going to be. And on that day where they were doing the rope-a-dope stuff.
That was impressive.
Jonas was the one that broke away and put 3 minutes into Pogacar, and that was game over right there.
Correct. Yeah, they broke him.
So who's going to do that from Jumbo-Visma this year? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, because without Primoz there, without two potentially guys, then Sepp Kuss, his role, he will not be released to go for a stage win. He will be final guy every day. Unless Jonas ends up with a big lead and on one of the mountain hilly stages, he's able to get in the break. But
yeah, Jonas is a fantastic bike racer and could be put in the same conversation as the best bike race in the world right now. But we've seen him for, 3 years now? This is like his third year coming in where we've had him on our radar.
Yeah,
he's had really good bike races and he hasn't really come across any bad luck yet. Have we seen bad luck for Jonas yet? For the most part, it's been pretty solid stuff and it's been constant trajectory.
Okay, he did crash last year.
Well, and then the cobble stage, they just fell apart last year.
Yeah, he was riding a 58-centimeter frame.
He was riding that huge bike.
That
was like a 50-50, too.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
I actually think that Jonas, between the two, I mean, we're talking about the two best at handling adversity in the world because they're both the two best GC riders. But I actually think Jonas has, even in his second place, still handles adversity very well. Mm. I think he stays calm. I think he's a very level-headed rider. I think between the two of them, I think Pogacar is more scared of Vingegaard in the sense of he knows that in that third week, Vingegaard is going to be there. He's going to be smart. He's going to be ready to go. Pogacar is terrifying just because he's the best cyclist in the world.
I don't think Pogacar's scared of anybody.
Yeah, he kicks his ass.
I think he is.
I think he was. I think he was.
If
you watch the interview,
he respects him, but he's not scared of him.
If you watch the interviews, he's like, yeah, he's better than me. Like from last year, you watch Pogacar like basically crash while descending. Vingegaard waits for him, then beats him. And it's like, you're done. You're beat. You are beat.
Well, he was missing a lot of his team. He got outplayed. Like it was more of a team tactical thing. Like if it was just a one up heads up, like we're going to put two guys out there to go race against each other with no teams, Pogacar gets him every single time. That's just my two cents, but honestly. I think that that's what happened because I think he's a better all-around rider.
I think it comes down to the sprint, and I think Pogacar beats Vingegaard in a like little sprint finish kind of thing. If it's like, hey, two of us are just going to go up this mountain.
Yeah.
But
all right, who you got for third, Jake?
So we got Tadej first, Jonas in second. I'm taking Jai Hundley too.
Oh, Jai me Hundley. And Jake have the same picks.
That means it's a death sentence for that poor guy.
We both have the same picks.
I don't know. Lance and I usually, when we have the same pick, that person usually does all right. And I think that this guy has got a lot to prove here. If not for nothing, if you do a little bit of research and start looking around at like the odds favorites where the actual money's at, he's right up there. There's a lot of people that are like, this guy.
That's one way to do it, I'm telling you.
So...
Egan Bernal will finish ahead of Jai Hindley this year.
Ooh, that is a bold statement.
Egan will finish the race.
Jai Hindley is the Carlos Sastre of this era. He had his one win in the Giro. Lance comes back and just blows him off the face of the earth. So there's no way that this guy is going to be on the podium of the Tour this year.
26, 27 years old, right in there. He's right in his prime. He's got a team that they've been building for the last couple of years to support someone like him. I think that Boros is...
27,
yeah. I think Boros is going to do a good job of supporting him. So yeah, we'll see.
That's the thing. You got to have the team behind you, right?
Yep.
Very interesting. What's our are we doing like, you know, polka dot or sprint jersey? Are we doing any of that stuff?
Do we really care about polka dots?
No,
what's no, not really. But we do care about the green jersey.
We do care about the green
very
jersey.
Very much so.
Yep.
That I was gonna pick Wout, but now I'm like, I don't know. It sounds very suspect that he's gonna be donezo.
So I know it's
Jakobsen. That's my pick. I gotta head out, guys. Green jersey, Fabio.
Yeah,
Fabio,
that's a good pick.
That's a bad pick.
Yep.
Cool.
And yeah, and white jersey is going to be Pogacar only because that's going to be the fourth or fifth place finish.
Yep.
Polka dot, I'm actually going to say is Vingegaard. I'm going to say yellow jersey is just because the way this tour structured this year, I think that actually the yellow jersey will need to win the polka dot.
Awesome.
I think you're right.
Thank you for joining us, Evan.
Thanks, Evan.
Folks.
We'll catch you later.
Tell you what, if we need to do a tour stage one, we need to come up with that. So I'll try to be in one of those.
Hey, before you leave, too, and I'll just make this announcement for everybody. Keep your eyes peeled for me sending out the links to do your fantasy picks. I'm going to try and get that out today. So I'll make sure to get that piped over to you so you get a direct text message. And for those that want to play along, we will post the link to join us on that on our social medias. And, you can go to the Facebook page or you can go to Instagram. We'll try and get that posted up for everybody to click on that link and get your picks in and your team built and all that other stuff before the tour kicks off on Saturday, the 1st of July. Cool.
Awesome.
Thanks, cool. Evan.
All right,
you're all wrong.
Talk to you later. Yep.
All right.
You all suck. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye. All right. Back to green jerseys. What do we got for you two?
I know your pick is Cavendish.
Oh, Cavendish. Yeah. 100%.
Your favorite writer.
I was thinking, wow, but I really don't think that he's going to finish. I don't think you even mentioned stuff like, oh, I might have to leave unless you're planning on leaving. That's my gut.
Yeah, he's already thrown that out there.
When is her actual due date? Does anybody know that?
I'm going to go with Jasper Philipsen.
Ooh.
That was was going to be my pick.
He's going to be sprinting.
Yep. And he will be going for stuff. And he gets over stuff a little better than Jakob.
Unless true sprint, yeah.
But I'm still going with Wout. I'm going to say
that's still reasonable.
The birth is delayed, and he makes it through the whole race, and he will win it.
I'm
by
just
100
curious
points.
How many weeks she's at right now. Like if she's at 38 weeks, there's just stuff called Pitocin that you can pump the wife full of, and she can
knock it out.
You know, just go into labor and just get her done. But then again, he's probably going to want to be at home with his kid. If he's a good dad, I guess. I don't know. Hopefully she can...
All Grand Tour riders are good dads. Yeah. I've been told. They're never gone. They're never far away.
All right. And so you said Jasper?
He said Jasper. Yes. I'm sticking with Wout. He went with Fabio Jakobsen, right?
These are good people to pick. They're all people that are going to be in the mix. I thought you were going to go with Mark Cavendish. No need to look around. No need to scroll around. You got your guy.
No, he's not even going to finish the tour. He's not going to win a stage. Ooh. He's going to cry. He's going to complain. And he's going to come up with all the excuses in the world. And he's going to yell at people. He's going to undress mechanics because he's
not
going to win.
We're going to have a field day on this podcast.
Dude.
If he whines at all. we are going to have a field day here.
Okay, I thought that Astana just signed his buddy, his leadout guy, Mark Renshaw. But Mark Renshaw is not on the Astana start list as of this morning.
They have till tomorrow.
They do have till tomorrow.
No, wait, no. Saturday. They have till tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow is the day they got.
Today is Thursday.
That's their last chance. Last chance, people.
I don't know. What about like a Vanderpool? He hasn't finished a tour yet. He's got the chops to sprint.
Sure.
He does.
He could.
He's got nothing else going on. He had a good spring. He's healthy.
It'd be interesting because...
He's never finished a Grand Stage.
He's
never finished
so tour. He's got something to prove.
It'd be interesting if he and Wout were just battling a lot and then all of a sudden Wout just dropped out and it was like, oh, I guess I have the most points. I guess I'm on green jersey. I'm going to keep it at
I would love that. Yeah. I would absolutely love that.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be good.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say MVP.
That's a good...
He hasn't been picked by anybody.
That's a black horse pick. I love it.
Yeah. He can sprint. He can do it in the mountain stages. He can go pick up those intermediate points. He has a lot to prove. He needs to finish his tour.
Has he said anything about green jersey? Has he even hinted that that's a thing that he would be interested in?
He's said he's going for stage wins.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. And I think he does probably best on rolling stuff. And it's just going to be a question on where those points are and if he even worries about them. I mean, I think you're right. I think he's good. I think he could be a green jersey contender.
Mm-hmm.
But does he want to? And you have to want to. You have to pick up those little intermediate points.
Okay, but here's the thing. And maybe you should rethink this, Jake.
Uh-oh.
Vanderpool is Jasper Philipsen's lead-out guy.
Mm.
So if...
Yeah, I guess that kind of does make sense, too, if that's
if
their...
Jasper well, doesn't...
If Jasper could crash out.
If he crashes out, then he's got a shot. But he's his last lead-out guy.
Yeah, you're probably right there, because they'll send Vanderpool to win some stages.
Yes.
When it's not a flat sprint stage, and Jasper's going to be the one that they're going to support for that. And MVP is a good teammate in that he is all about like what's best for the team.
Yes.
And that's going to be best for the team, so gosh dang it.
I shouldn't have told you.
No,
that.
I still think he throws his hat in the ring at some point in time to try and get that green jersey. I mean, Jasper's...
Only if Jasper... is out.
Yeah.
That's my
okay. Opinion. So I'll succumb to that and I'll say, yes, Jasper's going to be your guy, but I still think that the wild card is going to be like, oh wow, hold on a second here. MVP is up there in the points too. And he might be our best contender to finish it all the way through. Cause he can put himself in a situation to get more of those intermediate sprint points. I mean, just harken back to the best sprinter green jersey guy of all time, Sagan. I mean, I think that he's very much like Sagan, if not a better cyclist, and has the capacity to easily nail down that green jersey if he wanted to, if the likes of Wout van Aert are not there.
Yeah.
That's just my take.
All right.
So what about the best team? Who's going to win the best team? And Lance and I were talking about this before the podcast, and it was Ineos last year, and I couldn't even remember who it was, but it was Ineos that won.
It was Ineos that won last
year. That's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe Ineos has got the weird team put together, and maybe they'll do it again. I don't know. You got to think Jumbo-Visma has got the best team.
They do, but
they don't give two you-know-whats about that competition.
That's correct. No. And
they pretty much think they won the team because they won the tour.
The climbers will lead out the climbs and then shut it down.
Yeah.
And lose 40 minutes.
Yeah. They'll lose 40 minutes, but yet and still they'll be up there. Because think about Sepp Kuss, like he's going to lead out someone and then basically walk it up the rest of the way. But it'll only be the last 5K. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And guess what? He's still going to finish up pretty high on those stages. So who knows? And Wilco Kelderman, I mean, he's a beast.
I don't know.
Last year... Jumbo won the yellow jersey, obviously.
Yep.
They won the green jersey with Wout. Did Jonas win the climber jersey after all? Did he get the polka dots last year as well? And who was the best young rider? Jonas Pogaccia. Again?
They gotcha.
Oh, was it?
Jonas is older.
Jonas is 27, so he was 26.
Oh, he's 27. I thought he was a little bit younger than that.
He was 26 last year. So
okay, so it was Pogaccia. So they almost swept. Almost.
Almost.
Yeah. Crazy. But they don't care about the team jersey.
But they don't care about the team.
Team competition. So do we think that it's going to be an Ineos repeat? Do we think that they're much of a wild card?
No, they're going to have a whole bunch of guys that are in the 30th, 40th place. So sure, why not?
What else are they going to contend for? Because we're not putting them on the podium.
No.
They're not going to...
Only Evan Price is putting the entire Ineos team on the podium, 1 through 3. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, we forgot to get Evan's take on Chris Froome.
Oh.
Bummer.
Froomey. I hope Froome finishes.
No,
he's not even going to the tour. Okay. He got left off and he complained disc brakes about it.
Yeah, big names.
Blamed him.
Yeah. Blamed disc brakes on him not getting picked for the tour.
So Froome's not there. Roglic isn't there. Right. And Geraint Thomas isn't there. So three big names were not picked by their teams to be on the tour.
The teams know. They're looking at FTP numbers. They're looking at watts per kilo. They're just like, nope.
Froome.
That's too bad.
Froome was pissed about it.
He should be. I mean, I think he's fit right now.
Roglic and Thomas were not. They're like, we're doing the Giro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Froome should have retired a couple of years ago. But again, riding bikes for money right now. He's still getting paid. So why not?
He signed the contract. Man, you ride it out.
Yep. Quad lock.
Quad lock,
guys. Everybody. Come on, Froomey. Sell that quad lock. He should be riding the tour with that thing.
Do you guys have any like dark horse picks or like not anybody that's gonna necessarily land on the podium, but somebody that's like, oh my gosh, this person, I had no idea, and they are legit and they're there and they're gonna make a splash for themselves.
I thought that was gonna be Ben Healy, but he did not get on the tour team because going to the Giro as well. Huh. So Ben Healy, who was the revelation of the Spring Classics for EF Education, the Irish rider who won a couple races.
I think Wilco Kilderman, if like something happens to Jonas, like that guy is legit.
You're kind of in love with Wilco.
I am. I picked him last year for third or something like that. This guy's good.
I love it.
I feel like I don't know how old he is. I feel like he's probably 30 or something. And he's done decent in Grand Tours for a long time. Like he's got experience.
Well, how about David Gaudu? I know that Evan picked him in his top three.
That means he's not going to finish.
Exactly. Was that the kiss of death right there?
That's a kiss of death.
But you've got, I mean, he's the new great French hope, right? He has to be. I mean,
well, Roman Bardet is still in the race.
And this is his retirement swan song.
Thibaut Pinot is also in the race. It's Thibaut Pinot's last song.
Yeah, but
Roman Bardet's got more time.
Yeah, I think so.
He's probably wrapping it up soon.
Perpetual disappointment for the French, though. And Thibaut Pinot was a fantastic, very colorful, very animated, you know, loves the bike racing and whatnot, just never really truly panned out. But he had some injuries, and he was always able to bounce back, and he's done.
Alaphilippe, thank you.
He'll just be
Is he racing?
Yeah.
Does anyone know?
Yep. He is.
I think he might be able to mix it up that first week.
He could.
That'd be like one of those guys where it's like rolly stage, first week, maybe getting a breakaway or something. Like he could be
He's had a couple hard years. You know, it's funny.
He had about, I think last year, but no, he's having a good year this year.
The whole Quickstep team at the team announcement this morning, they were wearing gigantic berets. Cool French berets, like big, huge, ugly, I'm painting a masterpiece berets.
We're trying to prove we're French?
I don't know. But it
trying to be funny? Is that?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
I don't think so. But he had a big, giant beret on.
Yeah. I could see Julian Alaphilippe being like, I'm going for yellow. I want to be in yellow after the first couple days or whatever. Maybe after day two. I can't remember how it goes. I think the first course is like, maybe they start in Spain, Bilbao to somewhere.
Bilbao to Bilbao.
Okay.
Second day is probably
a sprint stage-ish, maybe.
It is not. It's hilly.
There are mountains over there.
Yeah. And then the second day is from, we talked about this before you showed up.
Yeah.
Is from a town just outside of Bilbao to San Sebastian.
They have hills there too. All in Spain. I think that those little hilly stages, I mean, they're obviously not massive altitude, but there's big climbs and they're steep. Some with Julian Alaphilippe, he could be a guy. He could be a guy for the yellow in the first 2 days.
He'll win a stage. He'll win a stage for sure, I think. But
or MVP or someone. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what those first couple days bring us.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited to see your pick of Ben O'Connor. I really think that he's got some potential. He's got something. And he showed some great racing chops on him in the past. And he just had some bad luck last year. Yeah.
2 years ago, he was fourth.
Yes.
Yeah.
2 years ago, he was fourth.
I don't remember what.
He had a couple crashes.
He didn't finish.
Yeah. He was hurting pretty bad. So that could be a good one to watch.
Yeah. He's kind of a black horse kind of guy. His team will probably get behind him. But who's on his team? I don't know who. I mean, he's one of those guys that basically, like I said before, stay healthy every day, stay healthy, stay upright. And guess what? The things will start to dwindle down in that last week where maybe he could do some damage and just pick up some points. But I think a lot of these people are riding for third. I don't think that there's a lot of.
He's got Kosenfra on his team.
Okay.
I can't say that name.
Pronunciation, nailed it.
I screwed that. Yeah.
I'm excited to do our fantasy picks.
Yep.
I got to get
that out. There is that. All right. We're getting a little long on this.
Okay.
I want to ask you one more question. Got to know. How bad is it going to be for Mark Cavendish this year? Please tell me. I want to know. Tell me how bad it's going to be.
I think he's going to get it.
I know.
I do think he's going to get one, but nobody...
Whoa!
Nobody's going to give it to him. Nobody's going to give it to him. Everybody wants to win stages. There will be no gifts. I thought that he was going to have Mark Renshaw for a leadout guy because they signed him, but I don't see him on the start list at the moment. If they do have him, he'll have a better shot because freaking A, nobody leads out somebody better than Mark Renshaw. So
yeah,
so that's. But I think it's going to be hard for
him. Who is he going to beat? I mean, who is he faster than? Of all the sprinters,
he's not faster than the
10 best sprinters, he's got to be like number 10.
Yeah. He's not faster than him. He is craftier.
I don't care. Yeah.
And there's certain stages where they could be a little bit rolly with a sprint finish where some of the bigger guys.
The only reason why we're having this discussion is because everybody wants him to beat Eddie Merckx's record.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. And the only reason why we're having this conversation was 2 years ago when he was able to tie. All the sprinters were gone.
He won four stages
because they were all gone. They were all broken. Nobody was contending for it. Which
could happen again. Caleb Ewan's in the race, so he's going to knock over a couple people.
And Wout Van Aert beat him on the Champs by like a wheel length.
Yeah.
Like he was second. He almost had it, and Wout just denied him.
Nope.
Love it. Nobody's going to gift that. Nobody's going to give it to him.
How was he received in the Peloton? I mean, we all know how I feel about the guy. And I know that he's had his little swan song, year of I'm retiring. Everybody respects him. But they say these things because that's the right thing to say. But in the Peloton and people have to actually put up with this guy and deal with him and his constant whining and his constant undressing people and blaming people for things that didn't actually happen. How is he received in there? Do people look at him and say, not only no, but hell no, I do not want you to win.
Okay, so I've been listening to Geraint Thomas's podcast.
Yep.
He has a new podcast out. He is actually going to be reviewing almost every day what's happening in the tour.
That'll be good.
And also Lance Armstrong's podcast will also do the same thing that has Johan Bernil, who is probably the smartest man in cycling and knows everybody and everything.
A lot of those guys like him.
Both of those guys like him.
Yeah.
Both of them have a lot of love for Mark Cavendish.
There's something there. We see what we see, which is not pretty, is not good.
But according to those guys,
maybe there's more
Cavendish
there.
Is really well liked. But is he really by everybody else? I don't know. Mm. Those guys like him. So that's my only thought.
How's that?
Yeah.
Did I say that? Sorry.
I think it'll be interesting. I mean, I would love for him just to be totally denied the whole time. A year ago or 2 years ago, we can replay our podcast and you guys, we're all saying no. And I was just to be different, I would say yes. Now I actually no, he's going to get one. He's going to get something. It'll be some stage. Okay. It'll be some weird stage. He'll get
Matt one. Thinks he's going to win a stage.
Yeah.
Lance.
I do think he'll win a stage.
Okay. I'm going to say hard no.
Okay.
And that's not just whatever because Evan I don't says. Think he likes him, but I just don't think he's got the capacity. This is the biggest bike race in the world. Everybody wants to win a stage. Winning a stage, you go down... for the rest of time is being TDF stage winner.
Evan's got him as his GC winner. So
change that.
it's in the books.
Okay. So that's
Price never picked him. He's never wrong.
You all think he's going to win a stage. Next question regarding Cavendish. Does he even finish the tour this year? Does he make it to the Champs?
Yeah.
You think so?
He gets around better than Fabio.
Here's what I think. I think he's crafty. I think he can, if he has any sort of crashes, I think he'll call it. But I think that in the back of his mind, he may be very frustrated and he'd be thinking I have to win on the Champs for this grandiose blah, blah, blah. It'll be the greatest thing in sports history ever. Look at me. Everybody look at me. So I think he could be extremely motivated for that scenario to play out.
Gotcha. I think he makes it to the end. I think he finishes.
I think it's possible.
I think that he gets to the Champs, and I think that he still is going to be searching for that last stage win, and everybody's going to be talking about, and that's going to put a lot of eyes on that particular race.
Mm.
that, you know, is Cavendish going to break the record on the Champs and try it again because he didn't get it last time? I don't think, as a matter of fact, I know it's not going to happen. And I think that we're going to see him and his true colors come out. And I think that he's going to blame somebody, the blame game, and he's going to get pissed off. And it's going to be a big, like, oh my gosh, this guy.
Well, yeah. What if a breakaway wins it, denies him? Breakaway so wins would be so hilarious. When's the last time a breakaway has won in the Champs? It's probably been like two decades.
It's been
a
long time.
I'd love to see that.
But it's the Champs is a little bit different
this year.
The course is different this year. They're starting where the velodrome will be for the Paris Olympics.
Okay.
And where they're doing some of the roads that where the road race will be for the Paris Olympics. So not starting as far out of Paris that they normally do. They're starting closer to town.
They do more loops?
I think they're doing the same amount of loops.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is I'm going off subject, but like the Paris Olympics, there's some cool stuff like beach volleyball is going to be in front of the Eiffel Tower. Like there's going to be some amazing things to watch.
It will be cool.
I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. We'll see. Any other stories about the Tour de France that we might have missed or that I haven't brought up? Anything that you guys want to share or talk about before we move on?
I think we're good.
Nope.
Bueller.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm very excited to watch Le Tour.
Me
too. Lots of coffee, early mornings.
Oh, I know. I'm excited about that. I can taste it already.
Taking it all in.
The first week I'm going to be on vacation with the family. Ugh.
You're going to get it figured out, my friend.
Yep. It'll be fine.
Cool. All right. Let's move on. I don't think we need to really talk to Champ because
there's nothing to talk about.
We already talked about everything. So, Champ, you can stay put for next week. So, let's do some backpedaling. Matt LeGrand, you want to go first?
Sure. Yesterday, I rode a little climb that you guys might have heard of. Col de Tourmalet. Have you ever heard of it?
I have.
That's a perfect pronunciation.
That's perfect.
I climbed it. A lot of you guys haven't climbed it, but I have.
Oh, yeah.
I climbed it on Zwift. Zwift.
Okay. Yeah. Is Zwift, that a new road there or something?
Zwift is announcing something tomorrow.
Oh, are you like inside with Zwift now?
I'm an insider. Zwift Insider. Ooh, there's a website all about ZwiftInsider.com. It's actually a website. But yeah, no, if I can find any time to do any work, put together a video. I could talk about this new climbing thing that they have for Zwift. It's going to be a climb portal.
Oh.
And so you're riding around. You can go to the climb portal if you want to. It's they have two of them. One is in France, the world, and the other one is in the Watopia world. And it's close to the volcano area over there.
Sure.
I point to you exactly where it is in the video or whatever. But you go through this portal. And then you, in this case, you go to the Champs, not the Champs, you go to the, whatever I said, the Tourmalet. Col de Tourmalet.
Yeah.
And you climb, and it's a virtual representation of that particular climb. And so you do, if you select it, you do have a half mile warm up, and you go into that and you start climbing. And so, you know, all of the grades match the climb. However, it is a very different look. It's basically just like a, think of it like a Mario Kart Rainbow.
Oh, the Rainbow Land?
Yeah, do you guys remember that from Mario Kart?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's kind of like that. The sky changes color. The road changes color based on your grade that you're on. And so if you're on like flat stuff, it's blue and then yellow as it gets higher gradient.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Orange and then red. And you climb. And you climb up to the top. You climb up, you do a little circle, and you come back down. And that's it. And then you come out of the portal.
And then you port back to whatever world you came from.
You climb as you come out of the portal, you're back in the same spot that you started. So
I like that.
So I did that yesterday. Took me longer than it should have.
Ah.
But I did it. It was fun. And that was one of the things I did this past week. And I'm sure I rode outside once or twice. A lot of swimming. We were at a swim meet all weekend. As we do when we're chasing kids around for swim. And so Friday, Saturday, Sunday was all day at a swim meet. And I brought my running shoes and went for runs every day.
Nice.
Which is great. But
good.
It's great, but you can't go biking when you're at a swim meet as much. So that's my backpedal.
Sweet. My backpedal is there's nothing to backpedal. I rode the trainer a couple times last week and I have not been, I'm still trying to nurse this hip thing into feeling better. And I've actually been off the bike. I haven't done any trainer workouts since oh gosh, it's probably been 5 or 6 days now, so if I'm not mistaken. Been doing some light hiking and went for a bigger hike yesterday thinking that, all right, I'm ready to try something, do a little bit of cross training and engage some physical therapy related stuff. And it all went great until we had to come downhill.
Ugh.
The eccentric loading was not my friend. So
not anyway, good for coming down.
But I will be back on the bike soon and hopefully start to build up some fitness again.
Ease back into it.
It's not bad. I could probably get back on the bike and be fine for the most part, but I can still feel it in there. And it's one of those things where it got to the point where if I continued riding and doing things the way that I was, it's just going to continue to get worse. And then I'm going to get to the fall and there's no way I'm going to be able to do cyclocross because it's going to be a big giant mess again. I'm going to spend the entire winter season trying to get it sorted out. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to press pause right now. I'm just going to take some time and focus on getting this better. And I've been doing physical therapy related stuff. I've been doing some other treatment related stuff. I've got a bunch of protocol that I'm following, doing my home exercises and just trying to be smart about it. So
have you been listening to Shakira? She has a song. It's called Your Hips Don't Lie or something like that.
It's freaking hips, man.
I think that's your problem. I think we can fix it.
Yeah.
Can you sing it for us, Matt?
Oh, you're on tonight. The hips don't lie.
I'm not even close.
No? No, that's awesome. That's it, dude.
Shakira.
Are they? Okay. Thank you.
Anyway, I got nothing fun to report. So, Lance, go. You've got cool things to talk about because you raced your bike many times last week.
I did the absolute opposite of what Jake did.
I biked 4 times per day. I rode
more miles in one day than I did in the entire week.
Yeah.
So, yes, I did the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder, Chad Sperry's 5-day gravel stage race. It was
glorious.
Amazing. I saw
pictures. Look amazing. He had a couple flats or something.
Okay. Yeah. So the week was 368 miles and 34,000 feet of climbing. And I think it took me over 26 hours. So it was a big, big week last week. So the riding part of it was actually very difficult. But oh my gosh, the routes were amazing. We had fantastic weather. Luckily, we had really fantastic weather. Jake is in the bathroom at the moment, and his phone is going off. You should have just answered that. Hello, this is Jake's phone.
Hello.
Yes, I will sell you that.
Hold on. Jake's in the can right now.
Jake's in the crapper at the moment. I'll
take a message. Or do you want to just talk to him?
Or just, I'll slide it under the door. This is what happens when Jake
hope this doesn't get edited out.
He won't even hear it.
He won't.
Okay. So... So, yes, the courses were gorgeous, amazing, all in Central Oregon. Day one was like a 60-mile day with like 6,000 feet of climbing, and I did. I had a mechanical disaster that day. Day one has the roughest terrain of the 5 days of racing, and, of course, I was on a descent that was very rocky.
Ooh, that's scary.
And I was just absolutely ripping the descent as fast as I could because that's what I do. And I hit some rock at mile 10, which I didn't see. The rock was right on a shadow line in the course. And boom, boom, double flat. Broke my rear wheel.
No way.
Like cracked my carbon rim. So...
Ugh.
My front tire was split so bad that I had to boot and tube it. And my rear tire, I was able to just hit it with the CO2 and it like held up. And so even though the rim was cracked, I think because I had Cush Core in there, the tire stayed on the bead and I was able to finish on my rear tire that ended that stage. But but my front tire, because I had to tube it, yeah, I had 4 more flats. It kept going flat.
Oh, my gosh. That makes for a long day.
I saw a picture of Lance, and he talked about this when I was talking to him a few days ago. He kept all of his tubes, and he, like, put them on his shoulders.
Like battle scars.
Somebody said, oh, you look like you came from the cantina in Star Wars because I had 4 tubes on my back.
Or just like the classics back in the day when they used to have to carry their tires with them and stuff like that. I just realized that I'm 4th. Overall on Zwift
on the Tourmalet.
Out of how many people?
4.
4.
Well done, man. You made top 5. 4.
People. Top 5. Top 5.
Top 5. Atta kid.
Some girl beat me.
I love it.
Yeah, she's checked.
Yep. Zwift Robo Pacer. Okay, come on.
Yeah, so I had like I had a tube with me and I had like three CO2s, but I went through all that stuff immediately. So I had to like flag down people to borrow tubes. I ended up borrowing 7 different tubes from people and like 4 CO2s because people would give me a tube. They're like, what do you need? And I'm like, I need a tube. And so they'd like stop, pull out their tube, throw it at me, and then keep going. And then the stem would be too short and it wouldn't work. And I'm like, and I didn't want to throw away their tube. So I'd put it on my back and I'm like, I need another tube. And so luckily I was able to get enough to make it to the end. Although I did not make it to the end of that day. It ended with a 6-mile descent, and a mile into that, it was a 6-mile gravel descent. A mile into that, my front tire went flat again, and I just rode it in on a flat front tire.
Were these all flats happening in different spots on the tube? Or it wasn't like the same thing happening over and over again. Like people will like forget to take something out of their tire and it keeps puncturing. It's just random flats all over the place.
Did you have Cush core around your body and the old tubes or different tubes?
The medical person. Guy had was there helping us because he had a floor pump with him. And so when I peeled the Cush core out of the front tire, I said, can you take this for me? And he's like, yeah, of course. And so I didn't have the Cush core with me.
So you rode it on the front tire, but the back wheel was the one that broke.
The back wheel is the one that broke.
Oh, my god!
And I'm riding in on my front tire completely flat on a gravel descent, just rattling.
All right, hold on. Press pause. Don't say another word. You're going down a gravel road, downhill, right?
Yeah.
You've got zero air in your front tire, and it's 100% flat. You've got no way of putting air into it, and you've got a carbon wheel. How fast are you going, Matt?
7 miles an hour.
How fast do you think our idiot friend Lance Friggin Hepler was going?
37.
I think I averaged 17 miles an hour for that 5-mile
section. You know what? If you've never ridden a bike with the front tire completely flat, you know how hard it is to keep that thing tracking straight and have it not like
17. That's fast.
Yeah.
That means we're going 25 in some spots.
I'm not smart.
Dude.
I don't know how I didn't. I was just trying not to crash, but I had all my weight back.
Yeah.
I'm like.
You're like, if the front thing goes out, I still can.
I can pop off.
Yeah, I can figure
that
out.
That just takes one thing, dude.
I know.
Yeah.
But that section of gravel was actually pretty smooth.
Still.
Because guys were going past me at like 35, and I'm like, I was so upset. I lost a whole hour that first day. So it ended up kind of being crazy. So actually, I got to camp that night. Schwalbe Tires actually had a crew at the race, and they were just fixing and repairing tires and giving you tires for nothing. They're like, I need a new front tire. And they're like, which one do you want?
Yeah, Lance tells me the story. Like, you roll up and they're like, how much pressure? What do you want your tires? We're going to set that up for. Oh, before we get there, like, what kind of tire do you want? What kind of tread tire do you want? Do you want, you know, how much sealant do you want? And like, they were doing everything for everybody.
And I'm like, just give me the tire and I'll do it. And he's like, heck no, I'm going to do it for you. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm like, how much, what's it going to cost me? He's like, this is part of the deal. This is part of us being here at the race. We got a trailer full of tires and tubes and valves and sealants and... And it's
well played on Schwalbe. Dude, that's high respect right there.
Are you going to be Schwalbe for life?
They very much impressed me. And actually, the tire they put on, I think I put on a front overland, a 40. I used a 40. I put a 40 overland on my front wheel. And without the Cush, I didn't put the Cush core back in because when they were fixing it, I didn't have my Cush core back. And I just thought, forget it.
Yeah.
I had zero problems the rest of the race.
Good.
No problems. My rear wheel, it was holding air, but we didn't want to take off that tire and risk a new tire not sealing to a broken rim.
Yeah, because the bead had been crushed down.
The bead had been crushed.
The wheel is done. It needs to be replaced.
Do you have an extra wheel?
So what did Lance do?
So I was in McKenzie, Oregon. I texted my friend, Chris Surratt, who is broken at the moment and is recovering.
Yes.
And he's actually been riding a little bit.
Hey, so I broke a couple wheels today biking around. Can I borrow some of your wheels? So can I break some of your wheels, please?
Can I use your gravel wheels? And he didn't even hesitate. Absolutely. Hmm.
And these weren't just some like off the shelf, like crappy backup wheels. I mean, oh yeah, take my nice Envy wheels.
Here's my Envy gravel race wheels. Come get them. They're all yours. He goes,
such a nice guy.
Envy's got a great crash replacement. So just ride them as hard as you want. And I'm like, okay. So yeah, I did a 3-hour detour that night. So instead of relaxing at camp that first night, I drove all the way to Chris's house in Albany, Oregon.
An hour and a half back.
An hour and a half back, yep. And he gave me his wheels, and I had zero problems with his wheels either as well the rest of the race. So,
what tires was he running?
He had a Schwalbe on it.
Schwalbes, huh?
Yep. Oh, he had
Might be time to open up an account with those guys.
He had a 45 EMP. The Schwalbe tires have a little better rolling resistance than the Maxxis tires I ride. I'm still a huge Maxxis fan because those Ramblers got me through how many races this year?
A lot.
Unbound and and Belgian Unbound. Waffle Ride, and I had no flat issues and no problems at any of those big races and all the other gravel races I did. They were all on Maxxis Ramblers. Yeah.
We've put a lot of those Ramblers out into the wild, and we always get good reports back, and they stand up to the test of time.
They, I mean,
they get beat to snot on these gravel rides, and they do really well. Now, I'm not saying that nothing ever happens, but for the most part, they do quite well. The Schwalbes are known for their speed, but I do know people that have had some issues with like sidewall tears and punctures and things of that nature, but that does happen. But I don't know. I guess you just got to weigh what's in your best interest.
So anyway, yeah, I ended up not having any more mechanicals the rest of the week, which was great.
Cool.
Of course, that was only day one. But I tell you, these events, this Chad Sperry puts on amazing events.
Sure.
The fact that all the food's taken care of. The food was delicious. There was plenty of food. You have breakfast. There's an open bar.
What?
Yes. Every night there's an open bar. Not only there was a beer sponsor, there was a bourbon sponsor.
Wow. Lance was drinking all of the bourbon.
And so
you probably don't remember those nights too clearly.
So you could go. There was a place that would mix you whatever drink you wanted.
As many as you want?
Yes. It was open. Plus, there was a beer sponsor. You could get as many beers as you
want. They were like, we're going to be open every night except for the last night when people actually want to drink, and we're going to close down that night.
So, I mean, the fact that he puts on these races like that and it's everything's covered. There were hot showers every night. Yes, people were camping and camp, but you can get the VIP camping where they set up your tent for you. Mm-hmm. They set up a tent for you. All you have to do is show up, haul your totes to your tent, which is already set up, and just chill out. Mm-hmm. So it's the logistics that he put behind it are fantastic. Hot showers every night. There were two places we camped where there was no like hot showers close by. He trucked in two like shower pods that had unlimited hot water.
What?
Yes.
Was there a long line though?
The line never got more than 5 or 6 people long because there were, I don't know, 15 showers?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like two separate pods of showers.
Wow.
So you just waited till somebody came out.
Did you use those?
I used those showers.
Okay.
They were fantastic. It was like, I need this, so.
It's a great time, and I was talking to Lance about like the fact that there's about 300 people or open spots for there, and you thought, what, about 50 people were like truly, truly racing it?
They can take 400 people on this. Uh-huh. They only had 300 this year.
Gotcha.
But yes, but maybe 50 people were like
legitimately
trying to race it. Everybody else was like touring it, enjoying it.
Go have fun.
Having fun.
Go hard where you want to go hard. Have fun where you want to have fun. And just have more of an experience. So it is gravel camp. It's kind of like
gravel camp,
gravel training camp, whatever you want to call it. It's camp and you go out and have fun.
And you chill out every night.
Sure.
And there's they did awards every single night where they did the women's podium, the men's podium for the day, the GC podium for the day on both. They also had a King of the Mountain and a Queen of the Mountain competition every day.
Sure.
And the King of the Mountain and Queen of the Mountain would get a crown and a scepter. And,
and
a cape, and the person who had that got to cut any line they wanted to.
Oh, wow.
They could cut the food line, they could cut the shower line, they could cut the porta potty line. Whatever line they wanted to, they were able to do that. So, which was just fantastic.
What was the entertainment like? Didn't they have like nightly entertainment for everybody?
If he had sold maybe 75 more entries, he would have been able to have decent entertainment.
So they had to cut some things to keep costs down.
Yeah. So And if he loses money if he has to plow a whole bunch of snow. Mm-hmm. Luckily for this race, he didn't have to plow a whole bunch of snow.
Okay.
So he kind of squeaked by on this race, which is really upsetting to me because it's so well done.
Yeah. 25% down in terms of like the number of total, you know, entries that he can sell. Why? Why do you think it was off? Why don't you think there's like a wait list for this thing or a lottery system so that, you know, you can get in and it's not sold out? Is it the price?
I think people are afraid of the camping, to be honest with you.
Okay.
They don't realize how good the camp experience is there.
Mm.
You're not making any of your own food. That's taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, you're just sleeping in a tent. And I think that scares some people away. The price is a lot. It's $900 if you book early. It's $1,200 if you book late. But if you think about it, if you've paid $1,200 for 5 gravel events, that's like $190 per gravel event, right? And so if it's less than that, I can't do math at the moment. But that's not expensive.
Yeah.
You know, most of these... Unbound was like $250.
Sure.
Belgian Waffle Ride was like $250.
Yeah, and they're not feeding you and giving you hot showers.
Yes.
And taking care of you.
And none of that.
Supporting you and giving you Schwalbe tires. I mean, there's a lot of pluses that come with that. But here's a thing that I think might scare people off. And it kind of compounds on or like layers on top of what you just said with respect to the camping. In the Pacific Northwest, weather's generally pretty good once we hit June.
Yep.
But for all intents and purposes, you really can't count on it until we get past the 4th of July.
Yep.
Anything can happen in June. We've had Junes where it's been an utter mess, and you've got rainstorms and hailstorms and wind and just bad, bad conditions. And just a week prior, you guys were like...
Heat dome.
I mean, yeah. And you guys were also dealing with like, you know, before that though, like I think it was the Y Racing's event was that they're... The big race. So they had the snowstorm.
Pacific Crest had a snowstorm.
Crest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that kind of stuff can come in. So what happens if you get hit with snow or really bad rain and winds and you're inside of a tent? That could potentially suck really bad.
That could be hard for people. We actually had brilliant weather all week except for one nasty thunderstorm, hailstorm that came through on day 4.
Sure.
And that was not during camp time. It happened during the race.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Chad ended up having to extract about 40 people from the race who were near hypothermic
mm-hmm.
because they had gotten too wet, too cold, stopped on their bike, and didn't get restarted. So they had to extract quite a few people.
Yeah.
So I think what else keeps people away is it's hard.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot to take on.
It's 5 days of hard racing. I mean, day 4 was 95 miles and 10,000 feet. But they are changing routes next year. And I don't know if they're making it easier or more difficult. Chad has been going back and forth on what he should do there. He doesn't understand why does Unbound sell out and have a lottery? And that race sucks. That race is really super hard. Does he need to make his races harder so it attracts more people? And I said, no,
mm-hmm.
don't make it harder, please, because I think that keeps some people away. It's 5 days, but it just ended up
that experience is fantastic. What if he were to do like every stage? You've got a stage that the races are racing that's like going to be your hard, grandiose,
yes.
like bigger thing, and something a little bit more sanitized for the people, like instead of it being 100 miles, make it like 65
so
or something like that.
There was that option this year. You could be a pioneer or you could be a settler.
Oh.
The pioneer did the full course and was part of the race.
Sure.
You could do the settler version that had easier routes. They cut off 20 or 30 miles and 3,000 or 4,000 feet of climbing, so they were easier routes. But that was not part of the race.
Yeah.
So you could just go experience that. And quite frankly, I think there were like 175 people that did the settler
mm-hmm.
that made it easier, you know, and so that were there to experience it, not to actually race it. And so that was a good idea. I think maybe if he found a way to shuttle people to a hotel nearby or hotels.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure the hotels would probably be able to kick in on that, or would want right. to kick on that because it's good for commerce.
You know, he might be able that might attract a few more people. I'm sleeping in a hotel with my own bathroom and my own.
I would
thing
like that. That like, night. I like sleep.
Now yeah. you said that there was 18 vans that were there or that were registered
correct.
To do it. Now he's charging for that, but what if? I mean, does he have to pay anything for them to park where they're going?
He doesn't. He's basically paying for the meals and entertainment for the driver.
Okay. Do you mind if I ask what he's charging for that?
It was $600.
So he's charging basically $100 a night-ish for that driver to eat food.
Yeah.
So he's, maybe he
and
needs
and they got all the swag too.
Yeah.
The t-shirts, the cool tumblers, the two pairs of socks. They got all the swag.
So
that's kicked
maybe
in as
maybe
well.
Come off of that. Maybe you don't charge $600. Maybe you charge like $200, and maybe you just give them food and that's it, or the ability to use the bathrooms.
Yeah,
and make it more accessible for more people to come, and then open it up to more than 18 vans, and say bring your motorhomes, and then try and create more of a, I don't know, like an RV camping situation, so that people can feel a little bit more comfortable.
His 18 limit was because of space.
That makes sense, but I mean.
We like barely fit in one of the camps.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's a way to have like it be offsite or something like that, which kind of sucks. But in the same respect, if it's not too far away,
you want to be part of you want to be part of everything.
Yeah.
You want to be part of the camp vibe. You want to you want to cook s'mores with all the pro racers sitting right next to you and having, you know, cool conversations and getting to know people. And
I get it. And for me personally, I can't sleep in a tent. I just can't because I've got rods in my back and I've got shoulder issues and I've got hip issues. I'm just turning into an old broken man. And I'm fine for the most part. But if I go and I sleep on a tent floor or ground of a camping, you know, tent or something like that, I'm going to wake up and be a mess and I'm not going to be able to ride my bike right. And if I do that multiple nights in a row, it's going to be even worse. So I mean, I guess I'm a little bit of a delicate flower that way, but I can see a lot of people, I can see a lot of people having that same, like, I don't really want to sleep on the ground for, you know, 4 or 5 nights or whatever it is and have to go race my bike. And that just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I'm a delicate flower.
Most of the pros had RVs
vans.
And drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vans and drivers.
So there you go.
Yep.
Maybe just make that a little bit more accessible and then you sell out another 100 people and Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I had a blast.
Ooh, I got one other thing too, and maybe I haven't seen this yet, but I mean, does he have like a dedicated YouTube channel where he's putting up good content to show what this experience is like? Because I see the emails that'll come through, like sign up, and it's kind of like a marketing fluff piece where you just see some pictures, and it's just like another brochure that you see for all of the races. But to really kind of get the sense of what it's all about, what is he doing to promote it with respect to like social media? I know he's posting up some pictures there and then, but like, how is he really telling that story?
So he does have a YouTube channel,
okay.
Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder.
Okay.
And they posted a video of every single day's race. So he had a videographer and photographers on stage, or, you know, on stages that were on motorcycles that were riding places, stopping, taking video, taking pictures.
Good.
And every day during the race on their Instagram page, the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder page, Matt Lieto, who he's been on the podcast before, and a former pro triathlete.
Tri-dork.
Yep.
I thought he was racing.
He was not racing.
He was just there.
He was there doing, he did all the social media.
Okay,
so,
for him.
So he would ride to like the king of the mountain, and he videoed with his cell phone. He did race updates throughout the day on social media, mostly on their Instagram page. And his coverage was fantastic.
He does Ironman, like the Ironman World Championship.
He does the Ironman World Championship
coverage. Like he's kind of becoming a bit of a name for being an announcer.
Yes.
For
and
sports.
He was the guy on every evening who did all the award presentations,
and
he's hilarious and he's great fun. And all those award presentations were a lot of fun. So,
nice.
So having Matt there, and he didn't race. He just went to do the,
he's fast.
Coverage.
He could have like raced and covered.
He rode his bike to stay with him on certain stages.
So they've got all of this stuff. Maybe they just need to do a little bit more to get that out there. I am kind of
more
in the
exposure.
I'm in the loop. I get the emails from them, but I didn't know that they had a YouTube channel, and I didn't go to seek that out. So they should be shoving that down people's throats. And if I'm kind of immersed in this area's, you know, gravel scene, if I'm a part of the race community, I should see more of that coming from them.
Yeah.
So maybe they need to do a better job of getting that out there to tell that story, because from all intents, for all intents and purposes, your accounting of it gets me excited to want to go do that, but I'm not getting that from anywhere from else. So
I think people see how hard it is and how much it is, and they just go, no. But then, man, you freaking go, and oh my gosh,
yeah.
I had a riot. Don't get me wrong, it hurt every day.
Yeah.
I buried myself every day. I woke up but sore.
60% of the people there probably didn't bury themselves each day, or more maybe.
Yeah. So I mean, I just ended up having a blast and met all these great people, and yeah, it was all good.
Gotcha.
So, I loved it.
Fun times. Well. Good on you, dude.
Thank you.
How many miles did you ride that whole week again?
368, 26 wow. hours,
jeez,
34,000 feet of climbing.
That's definitely more difficult than training camp.
Yeah.
So, ouchy for sure.
Although the winners only rode like 21 hours.
Those losers.
It was won by Michael Vandenham, a Canadian pro cyclocross racer.
Huh. Yeah, wow.
Second place was Corey Wallace, who is a he's also a Canadian mountain bike 24-hour guy.
That makes sense.
So he only won by like 7 minutes. Third was Matthew Bird, which is also a pro cyclocross racer.
Wow.
So pretty cool.
Cool.
Women's race was won by Evelyn Dong, and second was Stella Hobbs, and third was Casey Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. Nice. All right.
So
cool. All right, we're getting a little long on this. Matt, do you want to do one last thing for us real quick?
I got to post some videos. I think I posted a video about a watch last week. It was called the Amazfit Cheetah, Amazfit Cheetah Pro.
Is that cheetah as in like the animal or like a cheater?
In the video, it's like the animal. And in the video, I actually wear a cheetah print underwear. That's it.
Wow, that's some.
I can't wait to see it.
Check it out.
Must see TV right
must
there.
Must see. And then this week coming up, I'll probably talk about the new Zwift climb stuff. I also want to post my tour predictions, which you guys heard here first, but I typically do that. And then if someone beats me in the comments, I send them stickers. So
nice.
I'm going to try and get that out, but I'm also heading out of town on Saturday. So I don't know what I'm going to be able to get scraped together. And I kind of need to have another video scraped together for the vacation week. So I'm kind of screwed right now.
Oh, well.
Maybe no videos at all.
Nah, I'm sure you'll figure out a way to get something out there. Lance Appler, one last thing.
Nothing for me.
Nothing.
I have. I'm.
Are you
taking
in town for a little bit?
I'm in town for the next month because my daughter's getting married on July 22nd.
Yep.
So we're prepping for that, and I need a mid-season break. I woke up feeling like crap and puffy and swollen, and it's because I ate too much spaghetti last night, or because I have buried myself in a hole, and that's
free bourbon.
Also,
free bourbon.
It's all that bourbon.
Is that what it was? Bourbon or was it whiskey or what was that?
I can't remember. You name it. Bourbon. Whatever you wanted.
How many Moscow mules did you have?
All of them. I don't even know what that is.
It's all of them. The answer is all of them.
It'd be all of them.
My one last thing is one more time, we will have our Tour de France little fantasy league, I guess you could say, where we go and pick winners, and the winner of that will get, I don't know, pomp and circumstance and accolades and talked about on the podcast. I don't know, we'll come up with something, but I'm going to throw it out there. Anybody that wants to join can join, and anybody who does join, we have a Dial podcast sticker for you. And then I got some new little circle stickers for the Dial cycling community that we can toss in there. And anybody that wants to join in with us, you get one of each of those stickers, and then we'll come up with something for the winner. We'll come up with something cool. Yeah,
I need one. Sweet.
Oh, I've got one here for you.
All right.
So, all right. So we will be back next week with another one of these. Thanks for listening. And until then, bye for now.